Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
All right. Thanks. Thank you all for joining us today. It's Thursday. It's Veterans Day, Remembrance Day. So wanted to give a quick thank you to all those who have served and are serving. We should be thanking you every day, but today is a special day, so we're definitely sending out our thanks to all of you who've served in the military and are serving now, because we truly do appreciate everything you do for us. We are quite loaded up today. We've got myself, Jack, here's two yellows, as you know me. We've got Fuse, Magna Chi, we've got Mike Georgia, and we've got the mysterious Kevin Nellis from somewhere in the wilds of Nevada joining us today. So it's very much loaded up. So we thought that we would jump right into it and start with the United States roster that was named today. And I'll just read it out real quick, and you guys can then give your opinions on it and talk about anything you want to talk about with it. The goalkeepers are Brad Guzan and Dominic Servi. On the defensive side, we've got Clarence Goodson, everybody's favorite pair of Jonathan Spector and Bornstein, Eric Likaj, Nat Borchers gets a call up, Tim Ream, and I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce this last name, but his name is Gail Agbos-Umwande, I'm assuming, something along those lines. You guys can correct me if you know how to say it. Midfielders, Ali Bedoya, Eddie Gavin, Brian Carroll, Logan Paws, Robbie Rogers, and Mikael Dieksrud. And the forwards, Robbie Findlay, Juan Agudelo getting his call up from New York Red Bulls, and Teal Bunbury gets a call up. So I thought we'd start with you, Fuse, and give your opinions and thoughts on this team.
Yeah, I think the first thing is that after looking at the roster, I really could care less about what happens in the match itself. Because I think I might detect some strategy on Bradley's part here, finally. And that is that he's got four guys on this list, Dieksrud, Agudelo, Agbosamonde, and Bunbury, all uncapped and all with options to play for other countries. And I think whatever they may turn into as national team players, I think it's smart to get them on the roster, get them into the game, get them locked down as senior caps, and not have to worry about it after that. So, you know, beyond that, whatever happens in the match happens, but I like that idea. I like bringing Servi in. He's been kind of in the Netherlands at, well, not really Netherlands, in the Netherworld, with Celtic, as one of their backups. And the one that kind of puzzles me is Agbosamonde, because every roster I can find for his club in Portugal, Estoril Praia, I can't find him on it, but I can find three other Americans. So I don't know if he's a youth player over there. I don't know how old he is.
I can actually answer that question.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm pretty sure he's with Braga. I think it's wrong.
Okay.
Because I was looking at the same thing, because I actually know who this guy is from. This is going to sound sad. He's 18, but he had played for Miami FC in the USSF, and he is Togolese, but I mean, he's Togolese American, but I was actually looking earlier because I didn't think that looked right, and he's listed as being on Wikipedia. I know this isn't a great source, but he's listed as being on Braga's roster, or Braja, I forget how to pronounce it. So that's,
okay.
I don't know, somebody's wrong here, but but yeah, he's only 18, so there you go. But he's played for the USU 20 16 times already.
Okay.
And actually, yeah. MLS Soccer has a quick update from July that he was returning to Braga as well. He just signed a contract with them in July.
The one that I liked that we finally left Tim Howard at home for a little while. I don't think that in 4 years he's still going to be our keeper. I think that's kind of a given at this point. And Brad Guzan never gets to play. He didn't get to play in the Gold Cup last year. Perkins came in and did that. I don't really like that Tim Howard is always involved with these games. I know he's a good keeper, but he's not the keeper of the future, and I like that we left him home. And I like that Guzan will have a chance to play some games in this one.
Mike, your thoughts?
Sorry, I forgot the order. I'm kind of glad that it's in the same way that Tim Howard's not going to be there, just for the, not at this point worried about him, you know, breaking his hand on the goalpost or anything, but, you know, I don't want to see that happen, but, you know, it is getting to the point that, I mean, even Bob Rowley made the point himself that this is, you know, more of a start to 2011 than an end to 2010 kind of thing. So getting Guzan in there is going to be, you know, hopefully he's actually going to play. I'm assuming he is, but, you know, and it is nice seeing some of the international guys or the guys who have dual nationalities come in. I know Abgusa Munde has played a bunch for the U.S. U-20s, but, you know, I'm not exactly sure how appealing going to the Togolese national team is right now. But and I keep forgetting which one is the Canadian. And it's
Bunbury.
Yeah, yeah, and I think he, like, I had read that he was, like, he had chosen us once he got this call, so I don't know if that means he's going to stay with us or not, but if we could use this as a way to kind of avoid guys getting, who are born in New Jersey going to play for Italy or anything like that, this is going to be a good thing. But overall, I mean, it's, you know, going back to South Africa, so it'll be interesting, but I mean, it'll be nice to watch just to see some of the young guys get a chance, especially the ones that I've, like an idiot, have, you know, follow on Football Manager for years, and I actually want to see them in person and see if the race is right, because they're notorious about getting the young players wrong on that game. But this, you know, it's, I'm trying to find him on the Braga website, but unfortunately I don't speak Portuguese or read Portuguese. So if anybody could possibly clarify that for us, I think that he's right, that he's with SC Braga, but it's kind of weird just because, like, every press release I've seen, like Fox Soccer, I was reading Seattle Times, I think, they all had him listed as the other club. So, I'll be interested to watch, but it's, I'm not exactly concerned with the result of this one.
Did I skip over anybody? Anybody?
I think we did. That's why I was shocked. I was like, hey, I think I was going last.
I would want to point out, I think the one thing I really kind of like about this, at least with Bradley thinking forward, is that, like, I'm just kind of looking real quick, there's like 10, almost half the team has only single-digit caps. So he's really given some of these guys that are untested some time to play. I think that's going to be really important going forward. I mean, I think really the only two names that a lot of people are going to know are probably Spector and Bornstein and then Guzan in terms of the casual fans. But I think that's a good opportunity, too, to give some of these uncapped guys some starting time now.
You know, you could look at that as in another way, though. You could look at it and say that he's trying to build up some security. No matter what happens in this game, he's going to be able to say that he brought a lot of young kids. He brought a lot of players who were uncapped. If he's feeling that he might be under any kind of threat after that terrible game against in Philadelphia a couple weeks ago, this kind of gives him an out. And maybe that's part. Maybe that goes into some of his strategy.
Yeah, I know it's just a friendly, and so I'm not going to get all wound up about a roster, you know, that comes out, you know, that looks like this. I think the Bunbury call-up's a bit interesting, obviously, because he played for Canada's youth side, and I was sort of surprised. I mean, I know he called up, three guys from Columbus Crew, and the one that he didn't call up that I was a bit shocked at was Stephen Lenhart. And I mean, Columbus over the years has put out some fine players in terms of, you know, the U.S. national team. I mean, they really have contributed to it in a great way, and I've always sort of liked Lenhart's game. I mean, I think I don't know if he's quick enough, you know, for the national team. Maybe that's the issue. I'm not really sure. But I mean, he's certainly a guy who's willing to get stuck in. And I mean, maybe his time's coming. Maybe Bradley just doesn't like him for whatever reason. I just sort of thought, you know, for a game like this, for a match like this, you know, it might be not bad to have him up there and let him see what he could do in a national team setting. So I'm not really sure there what's going on. But, I mean, the roster itself looks okay. I mean, I like some of these players. I'm not really sure what they're going to do. I mean, I was at the friendly that Fuse was talking about in Philadelphia, which was just absolutely dreadful. A complete waste of everybody's time there. Just an absolute travesty of a match, you know. And I called him out for it afterwards, and I obviously got called out by everybody else. But you know, it was what it was. That match was awful. So, I mean, I'd like to see them, you know, go to South Africa and make a show of it, you know, put on a good show, maybe get some of these guys in like you were talking about. I don't think the result's necessarily going to or should get everybody wound up one way or the other. I'm sure it'll be loud. We'll get to hear our favorite instruments again. The Vuvuzelas will come back into play, I'm sure. And so we'll see how it goes. I'm sure that we can all talk about it next week, though, once we've seen the match. It's Wednesday afternoon, so maybe next week's pod we can talk about that and see what we thought. Anything else on this before we move on?
Nope.
All right. So I wanted to talk about – we had some midweek matches in the Premier League on Tuesday and Wednesday, and you know, I guess what I really the two things that we've talked about that we wanted to talk about today. One is, I don't know if everybody's seen it or not, but Joey Barton of Newcastle United and whatever prison team he may have been representing while he was inside threw a punch at Morten Gams Pedersen of Blackburn Rovers, essentially while the referee's back was turned during a stoppage in play. And then when the referee came over after Gams Pedersen dropped to the ground like he'd been shot, the referee came over and Joey claimed that he hit him with an open hand when everybody could see that it was a punch. And I guess the question is, you know, one, should Joey Barton still be allowed to play professional football? He does not seem to have grown up at all. And two, as far as this goes, do you think that, you know, in this day and age, again, I would think that hitting somebody with a fist is an automatic red card. We don't have the technology to go and review that play and see what he did to give the referee a proper, you know, the proper ability to send somebody off. So I guess the question here is, one, should Joey Barton still be playing? Two, does this bring up the technology debate once again as far as should we have it and should it be used for plays like that? So I'll throw those two out and you guys can go ahead and talk about it. I guess we'll start with you, Fuse.
I guess my answer is no. I honestly couldn't believe he came back this time from his last incident / incarceration. You know, I sort of get what Mags was saying in his article today about, you know, maybe this isn't anything worse than anybody else has done this or any other weekend in top-level football, but not everybody has his backstory. And, you know, I'm no expert on, you know, who in the UK gets to do what job under what circumstances due to their legal rights or whatnot, but, you know, at the very least, I think a team with the stature of Newcastle should just cut him loose, and if somebody else wants to pick him up, then he quite literally becomes their problem. But, you know, this is a pretty storied club, and I just can't see the, you know, he's a good player, but is he worth this? I can't imagine that he is. And I think they've got a decent team anyway, and, you know, from a tactical standpoint, they can probably stay up without him, and that seems to be the priority right now. As far as the technology goes, you know, one of the great things about football is that it's the 90 minutes of continuous action, and I'd probably be for goal line technology, but stopping and starting matches to determine cards, while it would do a better job maybe of administering justice, I'm not sure the price is worth it. I'm probably okay with just waiting till the match is over and the relevant FA can look at film and hand somebody a ban, or as seems to happen every week, you know, hear appeals on every single red card that's given out. So that'd be my take on it.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. Joey Barton was having such a good season up until this point. He, you know, he went through the Wolves game where they systematically went out to tackle him to really get him riled up, and he was able to avoid that. Just yesterday, we were one of the commenters and I was talking about how his comments about Andy Carroll were actually pretty fair and balanced, and kind of they made sense. He's when he's talking, he seems like he's okay, but he obviously has this issue, this temper problem that does need to be addressed. You know, I definitely think he needs a suspension, but I think that the FA needs to start looking at how they can maybe, I don't know if usurp the ref's authority is the right word, but they need to go beyond just saying that what the ref does on the field is okay. It's the refs can make mistakes, and we're seeing a lot of stuff missed that should be caught, and the FA should have the ability to go back and punish those players. Just because it shows up in a ref's report doesn't mean that it's that the ref's report is right, and we have the video evidence to go back a couple days later and fix those problems. It's kind of mind-boggling to me that they don't do that. We see that happen in the NFL. We see that happen in the NBA. And I know those are obviously different sports. It's a different environment. But I think it's something that they maybe want to look at how they deal with their justice system there.
Who's going next?
I don't know. I'm not sure who's after me.
Well, I'll go ahead and go then, since I interrupted, I guess. I actually really think it's unfortunate, as I've tried to watch almost every Newcastle game this season because they've been fairly entertaining to watch, especially between Barton, Nolan, and Andy Carroll. But you know, and now they're going to lose it for three games, and you know they did, and he said the right things, you know, accepting the ban. But at this point, I mean, even though it does seem like he has genuinely tried to be better, at this point it's kind of no matter how sincere he sounds, people are just gonna, you know, kind of brush it aside. But you know, he's been having a good season. I mean, he has four assists. You know, he's linking up well with Carroll. But as far as the technology goes, and I do think that what he did was terrible, but also at the same time, I think Pedersen made a bit of a meal of it. That doesn't excuse it in any way. But as far as the technology goes, I mean, you know, the one thing that we have seen, you know, at least UEFA go to is having an extra official on the goal line, which doesn't, you know, they just are for that purpose. But at the same time, I've still seen a lot of bad calls made on goal lines in games with a goal line official. I mean, I've seen like corners get ruled the wrong way. You shouldn't get that call wrong if you're just standing there. So basically what I'm saying is there's always going to be the element of human error, but that doesn't mean that if the referee didn't see it, then they shouldn't, or if the referee saw it, but, you know, said it wasn't anything wrong, they should be able to review it still. But in this case, I mean, I think it's good. They, you know, he gets his punishment, he'll serve it. But at this point, I'm not sure if they should, you know, cut their losses with him. I mean, not really, who's going to take him? That's the question. I don't think they can. I don't know if they're going to just outright try and release him or buy out his contract. But that would be a very tough transfer to sell to a group of supporters at this point, I think, unless he moved to a vastly inferior league.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've watched him play for a long time now, and you know, I've watched him play for a number of different teams. I've seen him commit, you know, some rather heinous offenses on the pitch, and obviously read about the stuff he's done off the pitch. You know, I mean, I don't begrudge a man the ability to earn a living. I mean, I'm not exactly sure what he's qualified to do outside the game. So, I mean, I have a feeling that his talent would always allow him to get a job somewhere for some sort of money in a professional fashion. I think there's been a lot of talk lately about, you know, what you have to deal with people in sports and what kind of baggage comes along with them. And I think, you know, with a guy like him, it's very difficult sometimes to to reconcile the fact that he's so incredibly talented. Well, I mean, he's talented. I don't know if incredibly talented is the right word for it, but he's definitely talented. And I think, you know, at times Newcastle looks like a collection of like the Bad News Bears or something, you know what I mean? They've got all sorts of personalities and long hair and all sorts of, you know, the whole Mike Ashley thing. And you know, I think maybe he fits there more than he fits at a lot of other places. I'm not really sure. I think, you know, the ban was right. He should have been thrown out. I personally think we need technology, and I wish they would open their eyes a bit to it and try to figure out something that will work. I'm not so sure that it needs to come in for every little, you know, tap on the pitch that somebody says, oh, we need to review whether or not, you know, he got the ball first, or we need to review, you know, whose head touched the ball, you know, so that we get a goal kick or a corner kick. You know, we make sure we get that right. I don't know that we need that. So I don't know if it would have applied in this situation, but I definitely think it needs to come in. So in keeping with the talking about some fouls that happened in these midweek matches, we wanted to talk about there were two particular incidents in the Arsenal-Wolves match. One involved Carl Henry, who put in a rather hard tackle and was not even carded for it, followed by a Cesc Fabregas tackle, I believe on Stephen Reid, that was very, very dangerous, and he received a yellow card for his tackle. So I don't know how many people saw it. I'm just going to give my opinion real quick, because I know as the only real Arsenal fan on the pod today, I'll just say this. He should have been sent off. He's been completely out of sorts this entire season. I know his injuries have been getting to him a little bit in terms of not being consistently on the pitch, but he absolutely should have been sent off. And I think there's going to come a time where his reckless play really, really gets him in trouble, because he definitely has been throwing himself into tackles this year with an almost Scholes-like verve of really going after people's legs. So I absolutely thought he should have been sent off. The Carl Henry tackle, I mean, Carl Henry, I'm not exactly sure what instructions he's been given, but I thought it was ridiculous. You know, there's a lot of really, really bad tackling going on this year in the league. And so I guess we'll listen to what you guys have to say about this. I mean, I thought, like I said, I thought he should have been sent off. I don't know how you guys felt, or even if you've seen it. Fuse?
I only saw the Henry tackle, but it's funny. Later that day, I watched a hockey game, and, you know, saw sort of some of the same stuff, and it made me wonder, you know, might it be that the call for replays or technology is a step in the wrong direction? You know, what would be the reason not to have essentially a second official? You know, the players are bigger and faster than they've ever been. You've got one guy. I know there's fitness tests and everything, but you've got one guy trying to cover 120 yards. You know, what would be the problem with having an official on either side? One in front of the play, one behind the play, so to speak. Because, you know, if a guy misses something, he misses it, but that doesn't make it, you know, doesn't mean it didn't happen. You know, that's sort of just what struck me. As far as the general, I guess maybe tone of play this year, there does seem to be an awful lot of, I guess what we would call cynical tackling, where it does seem like the intent is to injure. And that's a shame. It takes players out. It brings kind of a goon mentality to a lot of matches.
I have to be honest, I haven't seen either one of these tackles, and I haven't had quite the chance to watch them. So I'm kind of frantically looking at YouTube right now to see what they've got. I wonder, though, if a little bit of the tackling with Wolves and with Arsenal and some of the other tackles that we saw this week, and we saw with Michael Essien got sent off yesterday for tackling Clint Dempsey. And the games that we saw, even the Manchester Derby, was not particularly inspiring. I wonder if some of the poor tackling, the poor play, has something to do with the number of fixtures that they've had to play in the last week or so. You're a little bit slower. Maybe the other person's not as slow as you thought he was. You're coming in a little bit harder. I think that might have something to do with some of it. That is not a great tackle there.
Which one are you watching?
I watched the Henry one. Yeah.
Yeah, that was bad. It was malicious and then it was studs up, but he missed so badly that it was like, what the hell are you doing?
He likes to do that this season, too. I'm not sure. I take that back. That's not lazy. That's just a bad tackle.
I just wanted to say, you know, you brought up a good point there about the number of fixtures. I mean, if you look, and I mean specific, obviously, to the Champions League teams. I'm not saying this of everybody. There's been a lot of fixtures lately, but for the Champions League teams, if you think about it, you know, all four of the Champions League teams played midweek matches last week, had matches mm-hmm. this weekend, where United won basically at the death, and the other three sides lost. And then had to turn around. Arsenal had to turn around, play on Tuesday. Chelsea, United, and Spurs played on Tuesday. Arsenal, Chelsea, and United all played yesterday, and it was a win for Arsenal, Chelsea, and a draw, a rather ragged, ugly draw for United. So,
yeah,
that's a good point. A lot of fixtures lately. That's slow legs, tired.
There's a lot of fixtures, and You look at it, and I think the teams could probably have taken two of those three games. You look at not to bring it back to Liverpool, but that was their third game in 6 days they played yesterday against Wigan. Now, they were terrible, but they were good against Chelsea, and they were good against Napoli. Well, they were good for 15 minutes against Napoli.
Yeah, but Gerrard was good against Napoli.
Yeah, Gerrard was good against Napoli. But a lot of these teams, especially if you don't have depth, if you have a lot of injuries like United claims to have, you run into all kinds of things that you don't normally see. Players who are playing out of position or who are playing, just playing with a different group around them, and they do something stupid. I think that's why there's so many draws yesterday too.
Who's
next?
I kind of wanted to take it with Steve's comment in. Is there a reason the linesman can't point things out to the ref? I watched the video on Joey Barton. I'm like, what are the two linesmen doing at that time? And they're not mm-hmm. paying attention to the rest of the field. I mean, they don't have to call a ball one way or the other. Is there a reason they can't say, hey, he just slugged the guy and let the ref know that? Or is there particular rules they can only call the ball one way or the other?
They would flag it.
Yeah, I think I've seen them. I mean, I've seen refs at least consult with linesmen before. But I mean, if there's no reason not to. I remember I think it was the Chelsea game last year or the year before against Liverpool. Jose Bisingwa made a horrendous karate kick tackle on Yossi Benayoun, and it was almost directly in front of a linesman, if memory serves.
And the linesman called Benayoun for their obstruction, I think, on that.
Yep. Yeah, so it's like, even if they do, they still might screw it up. But, I mean, it is good that they, I guess they do have some ability. But, that's more for, run-of-play things. But there's no reason that if they see something that it's clear, if they see something that the official misses, there's no reason, I don't think, that they should be allowed to, at least chime in and tell him. I mean, if it's something like... let's say an official missing a headbutt in the final of the World Cup, they should be able to do things other than rely on the big screen. But I think that they, there are ways to, get around people. They're never going to be able to eliminate the human error, but you can eliminate not seeing things at least. There's no reason for there not to be a set of eyes on all parts of the field. I actually had never thought about the second official idea, and as an avid hockey fan, I actually think it is a good idea, especially because of the sheer speed of the game and the fact that you have, when you have tackles, like if you have a last man back tackle that comes off of a counterattack at the end of the game, which that's one of the biggest places you see that kind of tackle, the ref is usually not very close for that call. if the, you know, they're running up upfield at full speed, and if you're lucky, they're past the halfway. So that, I think that could be actually a pretty good strategy. I mean, it almost makes more sense than the goal line officials or the goal line referees. But I don't know. I think that to get back to the original point, I guess, about the dirty tackles and everything, I mean, I thought they were both bad. I mean, we, you know, could point to the wonderful post on the site this week about Arsenal being bottom of the fair play table, which, frankly, I had no idea about until I saw.
I just looked at, I was looking at it and said, oh, that's really messed up.
Yeah, I mean, I was, you know, fairly shocked by that, you know, almost at the same time, because just watching them, I know they have had, like, I guess just because I've seen them play up a man a few times this season, that I haven't really thought about them getting guys sent off, but I didn't realize they had had four red cards.
Well, Koscielny's got two of those right at the death of the game.
Yeah.
The other day against Newcastle, and against, so they were down, but they weren't really down for very long, and it's easy to forget.
Yeah, I mean, it's, but overall, I think that, you know, a part of it is the fixture pileup, and I guess part of it, you know, is that it, we were having this before, but, you know, not to be unfair to any teams, but stereotypically, sometimes you saw some of the worst tackles and the more violent tackles by mid and lower table teams against bigger teams, or that's what the accusations would be, at least. But now I think, I mean, we might almost be seeing it just catching up with other teams because of the fact that they either don't have everyone who's fit, have a fixture pileup, and they just kind of have to play a bit more negatively. But I mean, it was for the fact that Gerrard played 45 minutes last Thursday. I don't remember if he played. I think he played the full 90 on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And then yesterday, I mean, that's, you know, but the bigger, obviously, I'm not going to blame that loss on that. I'm going to blame that loss on the, or the tie on the manager and the fact that there was not another defender on the bench, which was beyond asinine. And that is, you know,
yeah,
that wasn't even a fixture pileup issue. That was just didn't have enough guys fit.
Poor planning.
But yeah, it was solid planning to put two youth strikers on the bench, but no defenders. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe it comes back to, you know, we start putting in these squad rules that limit squad sizes, limit who all can play.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, don't really do much to try and resolve fixture pileup issues. I mean, and, you know, it's, you know, the United played in the Champions League, but, you know, we still have several teams in Europa League, and those games are always the day later. So, you know, and we don't see the full squads in those games, obviously, but those who do play, they have one less day of catch up. I mean, you know, the fact that some of the Liverpool players only have Friday and Saturday to catch up for Chelsea and then manage to dominate them for a half is amazing. And, you know, so I guess people might point to that and say, well, it's not really that big of an issue. But I don't know. I think there's
against Wigan.
Well, yeah. I mean, you look good against Chelsea and then you just come out and you play terrible against Wigan. And, you know, it's kind of, if you want to blame the fixture pileup to an extent, maybe, you know, you have to look at not just the last game in the equation if you're trying to pinpoint that as the issue. But it would be nice at least to see them try and do something about it. I mean, I don't want to possibly say get rid of all these international breaks that we have, but maybe we could get rid of some of the international breaks that we have. But because, you know, let's, you know, nobody, those aren't exactly the most popular periods. But I certainly don't think adding another game is the solution, adding the 39th game. But it's been kind of ugly this year in a lot of the games. And that's part of the reason I've been trying to watch Newcastle, is that, like, the Newcastle and West Ham game, it was just free-flowing. There weren't a whole lot of people flying in trying to hurt people. And, you know, it's at this point, it's kind of almost getting to be the exception when there is a really free-flowing game that isn't kind of slowed down by lots of tackles. But I guess that might just be the nature of the game at this point.
Well, if you like fixture pileup, you just wait, because December is going to be ridiculous. There are, from the time we get to the start of December, I'm looking at Arsenal's schedule. Arsenal schedule, I've been trying to go over some of the December and January schedules because it's just so ridiculous. And so here's what we've got. Home to Fulham on the 4th, home to Belgrade on the 8th, away to United on Monday the 13th, home to Stoke on the 18th, home to Chelsea on Monday the 27th, away to Wigan on the 29th, away to Birmingham on New Year's Day, home to Manchester City on Wednesday the 5th. There will be an FA Cup weekend, I believe, the weekend of the 8th and 9th. The following weekend, they are away to West Ham, and then on the 22nd, home to Wigan.
Wow, that is terrible.
That's 10 matches in 8 weeks, and one that's not listed here for the FA Cup, because I believe that's the start of the third round, is that first full weekend in January. So 11 matches in 8 weeks, including a Champions League group stage match, and matches with United, Chelsea, away to Birmingham, which is always a tough place to play, home to City. I mean, it's just, you know, this...
Although that group stage match, you should have that group locked up. I mean, you're already through to the round of 16, aren't you?
No, because they lost. They lost to Shakhtar. So it's not over yet. I mean, it can be over after the next match. But all I'm saying is, you know, even regardless, I mean, whether they can put out a secondary squad in Belgrade. All I'm getting at is, you know, and this is true for everybody. You know, if you're Liverpool or you're City, you've got Europa Cup matches in that time frame. There's a lot of fixtures. It's just.
Yeah, I was gonna say, month of December, Liverpool have 7 matches, and from December 2nd until January 5th, they have 9 matches. So that's kind of. I mean, but at the same time, you know, ours are Europa, so we're not likely to see as full of the squad, and we're still winning that group. And we don't have the big, you know, we have, you know, Aston Villa, Newcastle, Fulham, Blackpool, Wolves, and Bolton. Which, you know, not easy games given any of our performances this season, but we don't have
we certainly
could drop every single one of those games.
Yeah.
I will be shocked if Newcastle don't.
Worried about Blackpool in the end of the season.
Oh, Jesus. Blackpool away. That's going to be, that's going to be terrible.
That'd be great. That'd be great. Unboxing day.
And then Wolves 3 days later at home. So, who was it recently? Was it Rooney or somebody was calling to reinstitute the winter break, I think. But
yeah,
I can't imagine.
Down.
Yeah, okay. And I could not imagine, like, at this point, I mean, with the other breaks, the season would go on forever. But, you know, and it is exciting, I guess, to have games all the time, but it's probably a bit much. And to have it, I mean, I don't know if it makes a huge difference as the weather starts to get colder or not, but I think we're going to, you know, you're going to obviously be seeing a lot more cramp and everything, but this is kind of from personal experience of the last 5 years, the December and January phase is when teams can really start to slip if they get a bad result or two, and then it just starts piling up because there's so little time between games that the results are just magnified. So it's kind of an exciting time as a supporter, but at the same time, incredibly frustrating because you know that it's going to be difficult for your team and everyone, but it's more difficult for the teams that are in Europe. So I guess that's kind of the bane of it.
It'll be really interesting to see how City do, because City, a lot of their transfers that they brought in were players that were under 21 and they don't need to be registered. And they can draw on that. They have actually a deeper squad than 25 players. And Mario Balotelli is not one of their 25 registered players. He's under. They've got a couple others that they brought in that are good players that are free. And they've got a little bit of depth there that they can play with if everyone can stay healthy and keep from, you know, getting into fistfights on the field.
I can't imagine what that would be like to have depth.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
there's still no defenders. I don't know how that happened.
That turned into a nice fixture pileup discussion there from talking about bad fouls. I like it. I like where we went with that. Good. I just wanted to point out, we talked about checking with the linesman, and of course there was the lovely incident in the Spurs United match where Mr. Clattenburg decided to check with his linesman on whether or not the Nani goal actually counted, and of course chaos ensued. So, yeah, they can check with the linesman, on any given particular foul. Obviously, the referee is the final arbiter of the calls, but, yeah, they can definitely check with them. So, all right. So,
if you're, actually, if you're really interested in some of that refereeing stuff, the Chappers podcast has Graham Pohl on it. And I know after the Clattenburg thing, he gave a really in-depth rundown of what the details were.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, he gave an in-depth rundown of what the responsibilities and the roles were and kind of what the conversation was. He kind of ended up saying that Clattenburg was, an egomaniac and overruled the side judge or whatever it was. But it's interesting after a controversial decision to hear what he has to say.
Yeah, I always liked Graham Pohl. I thought, he definitely gives at least he gives an insider's view of
yeah.
The calls.
Something so rarely here.
Other than his abject hatred of Neil Warnock, I think he's mostly spot on the things he talks about. It's also very funny if you get to hear him talk about Neil Warnock, about how much, he's always been a Queen's Park Rangers ticket holder. Now, of course, Mr. Warnock manages that side.
And he's doing really well.
Yeah. It's delightful to listen to. Okay, just real quickly, and then we'll wrap it up. The matches this weekend, I thought Saturday actually is not a bad-looking slate of games. It starts with Aston Villa hosting Manchester United, which should be, I would think, relatively tasty. 10 o'clock, we've got City hosting Birmingham. Newcastle United hosting Fulham, Spurs hosting Blackburn Rovers, West Ham hosting Blackpool, Wigan hosting West Bromwich Albion in what is more than likely a relegation. Well, for Wigan, it's a relegation six-pointer, or three-pointer anyway. They need help. Wolves hosting Bolton Wanderers, and then the late match, 12:30 Eastern Time starts, Stoke City versus Liverpool. And then Sunday...
Britannia, right?
Britannia, yes.
We're getting slaughtered in that game, I'm telling you right now.
Liverpool on the road. And then Sunday, Everton hosts Arsenal in the early match. And then the late match is Chelsea versus Sunderland. I would say for me, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing Aston Villa and United. That should be fairly tasty, I would think. You guys have any highlights you're looking forward to? I mean, obviously, I know Mags and Mike, you're definitely looking forward to Stoke City and Liverpool.
I'm not even remotely looking forward to that game. I have no interest. That game is going to be – I have a terrible feeling about that game just because we're not exactly the – if Kyriakos still can't play, I'm just worried about their set pieces. But – I'm actually more interested. I think both of the Sunday games are fantastic. I think Everton and Arsenal could be one of those really kind of high-powered games. If Arsenal, if they play a nice attacking game, it could be a high-scoring game. I think it'll be interesting to watch. But Chelsea and Sunderland will be fun too. I mean, Sunderland are a bit unpredictable and. They get a really good away draw at Tottenham, and beforehand they beat Stoke City 2-0. So it'll be interesting to see if they can actually kind of get something out of that, because at the moment they're very much in the 6th-7th place running. So there's no reason that if they can't try and stick around a little longer, but it'll be interesting to see how they come out in that game, especially since they're playing at the Bridge. But I actually think this is a good weekend of games, so it'll be nice to have at least two good games on Sunday.
it'll be good for nice for Wolves. I'm not going to watch them play Bolton. I don't think that'll be a particularly good game. Their last four games have been Chelsea, Man City, Man United, and Arsenal, and it'll be nice just to play someone that's a little bit more on their level. They haven't been playing badly, but that's just a rough fixture list for anyone to go through four games in a row.
I should mention, too, since he's on the call, and I'm sure he would like to talk about this, Ross County, relatively favorite Ross County fan, Mr. Fuse, they host Dundee, the lovely, broken, no-money-having Dundee on Saturday morning, 10 a.m. at Victoria Park. So, Fuse, any thoughts on Ross County and Dundee?
I think two things. First, I have to, Dundee has really done well on the field since this has all happened. They're down nine players. As I'm going to point out for a little preview of this weekend, they found out this week that anybody who wanted to avoid the three-hour drive on match day is going to have to pay for their own hotel on Friday night.
Wow.
Yeah, that's where things are for them. So there's that, and then if you noticed right before we came on, I put up a post that Derek Adams has left County as their manager and gone to Hibs to be Colin Calderwood's second in command, which, a move at some point was going to happen. But I actually think Dundee going into administration was the impetus here, because now County's pretty much safe regardless of how they play this year. And so Adams doesn't look like he's walking out on him just as things were getting bad. I think the most interesting thing there is that there may be this sort of Machiavellian move going on his part, because until they beat Rangers this weekend, Hibs were in the relegation zone and hadn't won in, I think, three matches. And there's more than one person who suggested that Adams took the second position because he's pretty sure Calderwood's not going to last much longer. So it might be a nice way for him to ease himself into a SPL job. But, we'll see what happens.
Should be very interesting. I always enjoy finding out what the latest travails of Scottish Division One are, because it is, and I'm not making a joke there. It is fascinating to me to see how some of these sides operate.
Fix your congestion. I can't say that.
I think it's Saturday or Sunday, the Milan Derby.
It looks to be Sunday. I actually watched. I had just got a chance to turn it on here at the end. Parma, who was in last place in Serie A, actually beats Sampdoria today 1-0. So sort of a big win for them. I'm looking over the fixtures for Saturday. Barcelona play Villarreal at 4 p.m. Eastern, so that could be relatively tasty. And at 2:45, Juventus AS Roma could be a good one. Bundesliga looks to be sort of – Saturday looks to be relatively non-exciting, at least for me. So I don't know.
Whatever region they are in. Bayern Munich plays Nuremberg. That's a derby, I believe. But I don't know what it's called.
Well, I'm sure that what's going to happen is we're going to cover all this in our lovely weekend preview, and then I will, on the weekend, try to write something that makes sense about something. I'm not really sure. Oh, we do have Colorado San Jose on Saturday night, too.
Oh, that's right. MLS playoffs.
Yep, and then Sunday night you've got Galaxy in Dallas.
Nice. That should be good. And Shella Sinman today won the MLS Coach of the Year. I don't know if everybody saw that or not. A lot of upset people about Hans Backer not winning that award. But, okay, so I've got to wrap up. Any last thoughts from you boys on any of this stuff?
Fire Roy Hodgson. That's going to be my answer every week until it happens.
All right. I like it. I like where your head's at. All right. So thanks, everybody, for dropping in and listening to us rant and rave for about 50 odd minutes or so, 55 minutes, I guess. We really appreciate it. This should be up on the site and iTunes relatively quickly, so we hope you enjoy listening to it, and you know, we'll see you around the site. Thanks for your time.
Yep. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
All right, bye, guys. Thanks.